Funding for Think comes from SMU Master and Doctor of Liberal Studies programs.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. If you were to meet a homeless student on a North Texas high school campus, you might not realize that student was in crisis. Teens who are homeless or on the verge of it often work very hard to conceal their problems, which adds one more big challenge to the long list of things any student must do to leave school with a high school diploma. How big is the challenge of homelessness in Texas schools, and how are homeless students defined? KERA's Bill Zeeble starts us out with the basics.
Almost every public school district in Texas has homeless students. The current official count for all students sits at 111,000. They're often invisible to classmates, teachers, even to each other. Sylvia Torres is a 16-year-old junior in McKinney North High School, her fourth high school in 3 years.
When I came here from South Dakota, they were ahead of us, and I haven't learned it, so I started failing. It started frustrating me. And I felt it got to the point where I couldn't eat no more. I couldn't sleep. So I was struggling.
Sylvia's family was struggling too. In the 2 years since her freshman year in Rapid City, the financially strapped family bounced around Richardson, McKinney, back to South Dakota. That's when they got word that a spot had opened up in the Samaritan Inn. The McKinney Homeless Shelter used to be a minimum security jail.
There's almost 1 million people in Collin County now, and there's still just one homeless shelter with 160 beds. That's insanity.
Lynn Cipiora is Samaritan's executive director. Smaller shelters in the county take in homeless kids, but no one focuses on adults and families the way Samaritan does. Cipiora uses the word insanity because Collin is among the wealthiest of the state's 254 counties.
And that is an obstacle I have to get around everywhere I go. But I have gotten around it because I have the numbers to back up the need. Always full, and last year turned away over 3,600 qualified people.
Today, the Torres family has a small room in the family wing of the Samaritan Inn. Bunk beds, lockers, a tiny bathroom. Down another spoke of a hall are rooms for women, another wing for men. The central desk is the hub of this shelter's design. There's a cramped computer lab, a small kitchen, dining room. A federal law, the 1987 McKinney-Vento Act, requires all public schools to educate homeless kids. It has nothing to do with the Texas town. It's named after two late congressmen. Barbara James explains who qualifies.
We have kids that are literally on the streets. They're living in cars, tents. Then we've got kids that are living in hotels or motels, the weekly motels, sometimes just daily.
James runs Theo, the Texas Homeless Education Office in Austin.
And then we have kids living in shelters. And then the largest category of kids that we have that are considered homeless are those who are living in homes of friends or relatives because they lack their own fixed, regular, and adequate residence.
And those, says James, account for up to 70% of the state's homeless kids. So when Sylvia lived with her uncle, she fit the category. It's a school district's responsibility to identify homeless students. P.J. Holland with the McKinney School District says it starts with a simple form.
And it just asks questions. Are you living with your parents or not? Are you living in any of these situations? And one of them is I live on my own. The second one is I live with another family due to economic hardship. Another one is my house doesn't have running water, electricity.
Other than support services, school for homeless kids is pretty much the same as for anybody else. It's up to each district to get homeless students to and from school, says Lynn Cipiora.
So we have about 15 school buses that show up every day taking kids all over the county. Or you can use the Samaritan Inn as your permanent address and go to the school that you would go to if this is where you lived all the time.
That's how McKinney North became Sylvia's high school. It's how Sierra Mikkel ended up there, too, after her mom got evicted from their Plano apartment.
I just assume, like, you know, like on TV and stuff, when people go to a shelter, you see kind of like a homeless people. I just kind of stereotyped it in my head, like it was going to be like a place with, like, you know, like gross people.
The 18-year-old had never been in a shelter before. Now she's one of those homeless people, and she likes the Samaritan Inn. Under McKinney-Vento, she gets food, clothing, tutors, counseling, physicals, annual shots, all the necessities to graduate. The senior has since moved in with a friend while her mom works in New York. Sierra wants to be a teacher for the hearing impaired. Her sister wears a hearing aid.
Even though we were struggling, I just grew up like being told that like education is key. So to me, that was like more important to finish school and focus on keeping my grades good, you know.
Meanwhile, Sylvia still struggles with some classes. She's determined to be a mechanic like her dad. She's learning to beat stereotypes that girls can't fix front drive axles or change truck tires.
I wanted to prove them wrong. How they said that girls can't lift tires. I proved them wrong. It was to a truck. The tire went up to my chest and I was like, oh, okay. So I tried and I got it.
There's more she wants to accomplish, like beating the homeless stereotype. Sitting across from Sierra, she learned she's not alone.
You know, I'm not gonna lie. I'm glad that I met her because I thought I was the only one that lives in a homeless shelter. I never knew there was other kids like me.
In McKinney North alone, there are 171 others like her, homeless in high school.
That was Bill Zeeble with the first story from KERA's American Graduate Series, Homeless in High School. You can explore the whole series online at kera.org/homeless. Joining us now to add first-person perspective to our ongoing focus on this subject, we have two guests. Desmond Davis is a recent graduate of North Dallas High School, bound for Oklahoma State University in the fall. Josh Hamilton is a teacher at Guyer High School in Denton who lived in poverty himself as a kid and now mentors homeless and at-risk students. Welcome, both of you, to Think.
Hello.
Thanks for having us.
Josh, in Bill's story, we heard about the problem that many of these students are invisible to the rest of the community. Nobody knows. How is this possible?
You know, that's one of the questions that I think I struggle with the most is really, how is this possible? And when I come back to the heart of it, I think really the issue is we have a society that fails to get to know one another. The stark reality, I think, is we've become so self-absorbed that we're no longer getting to know our neighbors. We're no longer getting to know our students more than on a surface plane level. So for me, that's really the problem. They become invisible in our high schools because we're not taking the time to get to know them as educators. And I think there's a lot of things that we can look at to, if you want to put blame on something, you could blame standardized testing. You could blame, evaluation problems. But to me, those are all excuses. At the end of the day, you signed up to be an educator. And I think if we go back to the heart of why we got into education, I think all teachers would say, I got into education to make a difference in the lives of kids. But somehow we've lost that along the way. And when we become less self-absorbed, we can continue to see like these invisible students in plain sight because they're there. They want help. They want to tell you their stories and they want to be loved. But we just have to actively seek that out.
Des, you've moved around a lot as a kid. 12 different places you stayed in the past 6 years. How did that happen?
Well, it started out first when my dad got custody of me, I believe in 2008. It was like the end of my sixth grade year going into my seventh grade year. And he was already driving trucks, but at the time he was just driving trucks locally. So at the time, what we end up doing is I end up using one of my auntie's address that was nearby my new middle school, which was Alex W. Spence Middle School. And then afterwards, he end up getting a job that was more, he stayed truck driving, but it was more out of state.
So he couldn't be home at night to take care of you?
No. Mm-hmm. And that began to cause a bond with the people I was staying with, not because I was a problem, because I'm never a problem. It's just that when you have multiple people in your house, it means it's multiple responsibilities need to be done. And also, that means that it's going to be harder for you to take care of yourself as well as the others that's in the house.
So you say you're never a problem, and I've heard Bill Zeeble's reports that told some of your story. You have been a really stellar student. You've been really mm-hmm. involved at school. It almost seems like too much to ask for a high schooler to never be a problem. I have teenagers myself, and I love them. And did you feel like you had to be on your best behavior in a way that kids who maybe had a stable home didn't have to worry about?
I believe my behavior was a must because, for one thing, this is what I said earlier this year. I don't want to become a statistic.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Because usually when you see someone that's homeless, they usually go outraged and they don't know what to do. And to answer your question earlier, I believe what makes us invisible is that we may be afraid to tell someone. So that's why we get in extracurricular activities so we can try to avoid someone hearing us.
So were you afraid that you'd be taken from the custody of people you were staying with, or were you afraid that everyone would think, oh my God, Des is homeless, that's weird?
Well, it's a little bit of both, and also at the time I was afraid that I may have to switch schools because of that.
Yeah. You, Josh, lived on the razor's edge of homelessness for a lot of your childhood. You struggled to sort of you weren't always the kid who was never a problem. You had
no.
some challenges.
Absolutely. I think that there are two types of ways that we can look at risk students in general and see the approaches they take, right? Whereas Des over here has taken this, you know, very positive attitude and best behavior and like out of survival. In my scenario, I took the complete opposite, and I would stay out all night because I didn't have – my mom was working three different jobs, God bless her, and so she couldn't be home, so I would go out too. And so I took, I guess, the 180 to what Des is talking about, and I tried whatever I wanted to try, and I would engage in, you know, behavior that as an adolescent was not healthy and was not positive. And so I honestly think there are always these two routes you can go, and bless Des for being able to take the high road. kudos to you, man, because I know how hard it is. And so, yeah, for me, it was one of those situations where I was a statistic. I was a number that said, you know, 22% of, you know, statistics are made up on the spot, right? Like that one. But 22% of all high school students, you know, engage in drinking or try mm-hmm. drugs before. I was one of those numbers. And it was really because I could get away with it. I could do what I wanted because, you know, I had that freedom and those opportunities. And there are two approaches you can take. So you have Des's story and then you have the opposite, which is sort of what I did.
So now you have a great job, you have a wife, you have a home of your own, you're not even 30. How did you turn things around?
Okay. One of the things that my mom taught me from a very early age was this basic concept of it gets better, right? And so she would work, like I said, three jobs, and she would push through, and she is the hero of all heroes in my eyes, and nobody could ever take her place. And so she taught me, one, that it gets better, because she only has a GED, and somehow got us through. So one, it gets better, and then two, this idea of a strong work ethic. And so I actually went to Texas A&M University Commerce when I graduated high school, because everybody told me I needed to go to college. But because I didn't pay attention in high school, I didn't make very good grades. So to the C students out there, you too can make it. So anyhow, Texas A&M Commerce, bless them, took me and kind of mentored me. And it was those 4 years in my undergraduate that things started to click. And then honestly, for as much negative stereotypes as they get, I joined a fraternity. And that fraternity put me in as their president. And all of a sudden, I was in charge of a whole bunch of people. And things really started to come together in my life. And I was like, maybe I'm more than all of the things that are in my past. And so it was those driving factors really in those first 4 years of college that said, let's keep going. Let's be a teacher and let's see where we can take this thing.
We're speaking this hour with Josh Hamilton, who's a teacher at Guyer High School in Denton, who mentors homeless and at-risk students. Also with Desmond Davis, a recent graduate of North Dallas High School. They are part of our Homeless in High School project as part of KERA's American Graduate Initiative. You can learn more online at kera.org/homeless. Tomorrow at 1 o'clock, by the way, we will be talking about the sudden resignation of Mike Miles as superintendent of the Dallas Independent School District, so come back for that. We'll be back to this conversation in a couple of minutes. You can join it at 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program. You can apply now for fall and design your own master's degree at SMU, a customizable evening master's degree for working professionals. More at smu.edu/MLS.
At first, I had walked around the mall, then the mall started to close, and I tried to get a hold of a few people because I didn't have a blanket or a jacket, and then no one would answer their phone, and the people that did say they would pick me up, but after like 2 hours, they stopped answering their phone. After that, I walked by a church and laid in the grass, and it got too cold to lay there, so I found out where the nearest jail was so I could get warm. I didn't have anywhere else to go. I had to go to the jail because it was too cold, and I knew that would be the only place that they would take me. He just kind of looked at me like, why are you turning yourself in? It's a misdemeanor. It was around my girlfriend's birthday, and I didn't have any money. All the money was going to my bills at my place, and I wanted to get her something for her birthday. And I think it was a birthday card and a few miscellaneous things that I really don't remember anymore. It just wasn't even worth stealing. I just told him that I wanted to do the right thing and turn myself in. I didn't really want to tell him that I was homeless and just didn't want to stay out in the cold. I was at the Arlington jail for 1 or 2 days, and then after that, they transferred me over to Tarrant County, and I was there for 2 to 3 weeks. And I got out of jail on my birthday when I turned 19. Once I got here to UGM, I joined Community Kitchen just to find a way to get a job to get out of here. You get up by 9, or you get up before then to go eat breakfast. Around 8 o'clock, you get up. You either go to your chore that you do here, or you talk to your case manager. Your case manager, they help you go find jobs weekly. They'll help you get bus passes to go to interviews. So they'll help you make your resume. I feel like my life is getting coming together a lot more than before. Hopefully won't be here much longer with the way I'm going right now. It's just because you become homeless doesn't mean this is hopeless. I mean, people get out of their situations. When you give up, that's when you get stuck here. And as long as you just keep trying to find ways to get out of here, then you will get out.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. That was Derek Lynch Long, one of those featured in KERA's American Graduate series, Homeless in High School, sharing the story of his first night without a home. Derek begins a cooking internship at Union Gospel Mission this summer and had plans to find a job. You can explore the series and hear other stories online at kera.org/homeless. Back now to my two guests for the hour. We have Josh Hamilton, who's a teacher at Guyer High School in Denton, who mentors homeless and at-risk students, and Desmond Davis, a graduate, recent graduate of North Dallas High School. And Des, we were talking over the break. You have an awesome job for the summer.
Yes, I work with the Homeless Education Program. My goal is to supervise kids that's also in shelters, but younger than me. So my main job is usually when the school bus arrives with the kids, we take them to the YMCA located in West Dallas. We let them go out and swim for about an hour. Then also we let them, once they get out, dry themselves off. We let them eat their snacks, their lunch, and then also we take them to the gym for the last part of the camp.
I would imagine lots of times during the day, they just look like any kids you could see anywhere in America. Are there moments, having worked in the program before, even though this is your first year, I guess, as a paid employee, when you can see one of these kids and think, this guy, this gal is having a tough day?
Usually, I can notice that real easily just by their facial emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So far, we haven't had a kid that was sad or angry so far yet.
When you, Josh, are working with students, especially with older students, teenagers, there's a fine line between wanting to say, I'm here for you, I know you're still a kid and you need support and you need love, and also respecting, you know, sometimes they've maybe built a little facade around themselves to feel like they can get through the day. How have you learned to find maybe the little tiny crack in that facade and work your way in there without making the student feel like you just won't leave them alone?
So for me, I think the most important thing is that you're open and you're honest, mm-hmm. right? So we connect with people that we feel share similar interests, stories, et cetera. So one of the first things that I do as a teacher is I tell them about my life. I tell them, you know, here's where I've been, here's where I'm going, here are all the, you know, things about me in the most professional, you know, manner possible. But I'm real. I'm very realistic about like who I am and where I've come from. What I've noticed over the years is it's that makes the crack, because it may not be that day, it may be 8 weeks into the semester. But students who find similarities and find that connection always find their way back to my classroom to say, hey, I have a story for you. Or, hey, can I talk to you about something? Or it can be as simple as when they go up and present their, I call it the stages of life, right? So they have these, and they color, I'm a coloring teacher for some reason, although I'm a horrible drawer. The reality is that when they get up and present too, though, that's when you can see it. Right. So oftentimes it comes out in those little moments, or we do the slam poetry lesson in my class where you can write whatever you want in slam poetry format. It's that lesson when I go first, and my slam poetry piece is called Tales from a Trailer. And it really is the ins and outs of my experience. And then the next kid gets up there and theirs is so similar. That's the crack. It's when you can find that connection piece. And I think that it's that that's the secret. When anyone asks me what makes a good teacher, I always go back to it's someone who can relate to and make whatever it is they're teaching relevant to students. And so that's what I try to do every day.
For the fourth chapter of our American Graduate Series, Homeless in High School, KERA's Bill Zeeble took us to the campus with the most homeless kids in Dallas, where my guest Desmond Davis went to school. Not only is one of every eight students at North Dallas High homeless, this is a school that ranks in the bottom fifth statewide academically. This past year, North Dallas lost its principal and two key staffers who dealt with troubled kids. And yet, as Bill reports, many see the school as a center of innovation.
160. That was the number of homeless kids this past year in North Dallas High School. Homeless students are four times more likely to drop out, says the National Coalition for the Homeless. So 3 years ago, North Dallas High opened the district's first drop-in center to change those odds.
We got breakfast tacos, we've got fruit, we've got juice, we've got cookies.
Jim Rain is a drop-in center volunteer from the Church of the Incarnation across the street from the school.
Kids who have been identified by the school as homeless are free to drop in and get some breakfast, get some toothpaste, toothbrushes, sanitary stuff. We also have a clothing closet.
The drop-in center helps turn the homeless student label into a real person.
My name is Kimberly, and I wrestle.
Wrestling has helped change Kimberly Jackson's life. She's in the drop-in center this Friday morning for food and friends. The 16-year-old homeless sophomore, who lives in a shelter with her mom and two younger sisters, used to be pinned down by her own bad behavior.
Gave me something to do besides fighting, so I just turned that fighting into something positive.
Okay, she's modest. Kimberly took a Texas wrestling title this year, a first for the district and the Bulldogs. Last month, she earned a national title. Next month, she goes international for a shot at the Junior Olympics. For all that, she's grateful to the folks back home.
Because it's a lot of people here that motivate me. They're very good motivators, and they have very good spirits. And, you know, some people are from the church, so if I need to be prayed for, if I need to talk to someone about something, they're always there.
The Church of the Incarnation helped build out Mark Pierce's vision of this drop-in center. Pierce is homeless education director for the Dallas schools, and he borrowed ideas from across the country. But most of those centers weren't in schools.
Our primary objective is to get these kids to school every single day and to get them to their school of origin so that they will graduate, because they're much more likely to graduate from the school that they started at once they're in high school, because that's where their friends are, that's where their activities are, that's where the teachers are that know them and the counselors that know them.
Pierce has launched drop-in centers at other Dallas schools because he says the one at North Dallas works.
In the last couple of years, the students who attend the drop-in center show a 95% attendance rate. The students who do not attend the drop-in center show an 82% attendance rate. We're showing positive results.
Good results keep church volunteers like Paul Gonzalez coming back too.
If there is a class of 400 freshmen, the statistic is that only half of them will make it to graduation. We have several kids that have been with us through the beginning of the program. All of the seniors that come here are actually graduating, so that's something that we're really proud of.
In addition to the drop-in center, the school also has a social services director and uses psychologists and psychiatrists who work for the district. Then there's the student action team, part of Charles Johnson's Bulldog legacy. CJ created it when he worked at the school. The group helps kids earn credits to graduate and serves the homeless in nearby shelters. Sophomore Jeanette Ruiz says she joined to give something back. She chokes up remembering.
We were homeless for a long time, and all the shelters that helped us, really, it was mostly the community here.
She got food too, Jeanette says, fighting through tears. She insists on finishing her story.
we did Angel Tree with the Church of Incarnations, and one year, actually, I was about 10, they gave us some Christmas presents, which is really cool because we didn't feel the Christmas spirit. But through, like, Angel Tree, that really helped us out. We felt like people were trying to help us, that we were actually mattered, and that just made us feel really great.
Next year, things will change at North Dallas High. There will be a new principal. CJ has left for a new job, and another staffer who helped homeless kids every day won't be back either. Mark Pierce isn't worried. He says community liaison Rafael Rodriguez remains, and so does the drop-in center with its team of church volunteers. Schools live through changes all the time. As long as there are people who care, he says, this one will be a refuge for kids who are homeless in high school.
That was KERA's Bill Siebel with a profile of North Dallas High School, where one of our guests this hour just graduated. You can check out the whole series online and see a video of Desmond Davis at kera.org/homeless. Des, sitting here with you listening to that story, there was a lot that sort of reminded you of the good times in school. What did the drop-in center and a club like Action Team mean to you as you were going through your years at North Dallas High?
Well, it was like a place where I can escape most of my problems, and I didn't really have to tell anybody either. They was just like, "Come on, we make sure you get breakfast. We're not. We're gonna make sure that you're eating right." And I was like, "Okay." And then Action Team, I love that club so much because it gives me a chance to help somebody that's in a worse condition than I am.
I love that idea, and I'm curious from your perspective, Josh, what helping students who, you know, by a lot of measurements, have many more things working against them than the average student, what helping them to recognize that there is need even beyond their own lives can do for them?
I think the best thing that it can do for students, so something like the Action Team, and I wish you all could see us in studio because Dez's face lit up when they started talking about the Action
Some
Team.
Fist pumps. And
absolutely. Yeah. It made my heart so happy that he was still so excited about that. So it's programs like that that I really think that give you perspective. I think perspective is key, right? So whether you're listening to Dez's story or you're tuning in now and you're feeling something, right? If something's moving inside of you that you should take action, just like Dez says, there are people out there that have far worse situations than either of us could even probably fathom.
Exactly.
Yeah, and so it's in giving back, it's that going out and seeing those people, for me, I don't know about for you, but it always put it back into perspective that, you know what, A, I could have it worse, and B, it can get a lot better. So how can I give back so we can all sort of like come up together rather than this divide that we sort of have created in a society where we have the really have-nots, have-somes, and then people that have a whole lot. And so for me, it really was showing me perspective. I think that's the best thing it does for students.
Des, did you always just go through school assuming you'd go to college, or were there people who said, dude, you are smart, you are going to college?
I had teachers in my life that told me, "Oh, if you keep this up, you'll be going to college in no time."
Hmm.
And at the time, I believe my freshman year, I was just going to school just to be going. The only thing I really did was band, and that was it. And I didn't do anything else besides that. I didn't really know a whole lot of people that was there, because that transition from middle school to high school was ridiculous.
It's a shock for a lot of students.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what was so great about band?
Oh, well, that was like one of my escape routes.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've been in, especially fifth grade, because that's where it all started. And I said to myself, I need an escape from what I'm going through. And that was like the number one escape. So when I play with my instrument, that gives me a chance to express how I really feel through music.
And that's one of those notions that I would love to echo, is this idea of getting students involved in extracurricular activities. I was blessed enough to write an article for two journals for National Speech and Debate as a debate coach, and it was entitled "How Speech and Debate Saved My Life." And having a speech and debate team, I played high school football all 4 years as well. So shout out to Coach Rodney Webb. So he was such a great mentor for me. But my debate coach, even though she kicked me out of the debate team twice, thank you, Ann Payne. I told you I was a bad kid. Even though she kicked me out twice, she's still my mentor and friend to this day. When I need something, and the person that I usually go to. And so if it wasn't for those extracurricular activities, I'm not sure how much worse it could have gotten. It was one of those things that I knew there were requirements in place and ways I needed to act. I'm sure the same thing for you. There are ways we act in band or on the wrestling team or on the debate team or yes. in the action group. We act a certain way. And if you don't meet those requirements, this isn't going to be your safe haven anymore. So to hear Dez say like that was his escape, I'm going to echo that sentiment 10 times over and encourage anyone out there who's listening to say, if you know people who are struggling, getting them involved, I think, is so fundamentally critical. I think it's life-changing. It sounds like it changed your life. I know it changed mine.
It did. It has.
You know, the interesting thing that you say, Josh, about mentors is, you know, there are definitely people who support you and say, I believe in you. I think you can do anything. They're also the people who are not going to take any garbage from you. And if you've messed up, they're going to let you know that.
She kicked me out twice, two times. So I definitely think it's taking that hardline stance too. So it's to echo that same sentiment as if you're an educator or parent listening this afternoon and you have these strict expectations. I think expectations are great, and I think you have to have them in order to push people to the next level. I'm the first person to say, on my debate team, these are the things we're going to do. And I understand messing up and we can talk through it, but continually messing up is not going to work. And so I think it's really important, especially for at-risk students, to have structure and for them to have goals, obtainable goals that they can meet. I think setting big goals may be too far-fetched, but I think that structure is key.
We're speaking this hour with Josh Hamilton, who's a teacher at Guyer High School in Denton, who mentors homeless and at-risk students. Also with Desmond Davis, a recent graduate of North Dallas High School, who is on his way in the fall to Oklahoma State University. They're part of KERA's Homeless in High School series, which is part of KERA's American Graduate Initiative. You can check it out online at kera.org/homeless. If you'd like to be part of our conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372. Or you can email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program. You can apply now for fall and design your own master's degree at SMU, specializing in communications or organizational dynamics. More at smu.edu/MLS.
For years, I've always heard, you'll be 18, you're old enough, I'll kick you out, you leave. And it's very hard for a child, any child, but having to be adopted and then having that guardian, someone who you care for, who cared for you, to say leave, to cast you away like trash. It's disheartening. It reaches the very core of your existence of why is this happening? Who really loves me? My friends, they help me find a home, staying with their family. Sleeping on the floor while going to school and trying to make, decent grades. Just dealing with the displacement of being in high school, a senior, and basically having the clothes on your back to go house to house. I wanted to make my life better. I've seen a lot of stories of where people have the cycle over and over of abuse, of alcohol, drugs, and I didn't want to fall into that cycle. I worked hard. I stay motivated. And I live by this phrase. Today, I am a better man. I will be a better man.
That was Jeremy Orozco, another high school student featured in KERA's American Graduate Series, Homeless in High School. You're listening to Think on KERA. Jeremy graduated from Guyer High School in Denton this spring and plans to attend Abilene Christian University in the fall. You can explore the series and hear other stories online at kera.org/homeless. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call 800-933-5372. What we just heard from Jeremy reflects the conversation that we were having in the break, which is that there's hardship that you can make meaning of and allow it, although it's never something anybody wishes for. Finding meaning seems to really matter, and it seems like both of you in different ways have managed to do that.
Exactly.
Yeah, I would say that that's the one piece that I think keeps me going, is the idea that I had some students ask me last week when I was keynoting at a church camp that if I could go back and change all the things that have happened in my life, would I? And I struggled with that for a second, and then I said, no, I wouldn't change a thing. I've been through a lot of things, and they're not all happy stories, but the thing about all of those is, and it's what we were sort of talking about in the break, is that they've shaped me into the man that I am today. They've made my work ethic. They've made my interpersonal skills even better. They've made this idea about perspective. When I look at the world now, I see it so much differently than I think I would have if this wasn't my story. When Des walked in, we immediately just started talking, right? And when we started,
exactly. This is our first time ever.
We've never met until this afternoon. And all of a sudden, we have this easy connection piece because we both have stories, right? And so it's these stories that are connecting us.
Exactly. And to continue to what he just said, and I thought about sometimes when people ask me, would you change anything that happened in your life? And I also said no, because if it wasn't for that, I would be in a totally different path that I'm going right now. And it may not be a good path.
So, I'm guessing you have friends who didn't end up on the good path.
I had a couple of people that didn't end up on a good path.
And how does that work for you? Do you mourn for them? Do you have to give up on them at some point? Do you still try to stay in touch? What do you do?
I still try to stay in touch with them, but my thing is, it's your choice. Everybody has a choice in life. And I can do as much as I can to help you out if you accept it. But that's your choice if you want to accept that choice, because you only control your own body. So I believe if you want to help, I'll be here for you. If you do not want to help, I'm okay. But if you still need me, I'm here.
I think that at some point, everyone shows you their true colors. Okay, so everybody's facade comes down, right?
Exactly.
I remember growing up in the trailer park that we grew up in, I had a bunch of friends who were in the same scenario that we were, and they were just trying to scrape it together and trying to make it. And I can remember so many of them taking just an awful path, and I wanted to be there for them over and over and over again. But at some point, people show you who they are, right, where their loyalty lies. And when I was 17, my stepmother, my dad's second wife, from 10 years, I had two moms my whole life. She died in a car accident. And when she died, I was devastated. And I remember being at her funeral, looking around, and I didn't see any of those buddies from the trailer park that I had grown up. But the people that were there were my buddies in high school, like my running group when I was at school, right? And it was at that moment that I learned you can't help everybody, because not everybody's going to be there for you, right? When someone shows you, a good friend of mine named BK always uses this expression. He says, when someone shows you their true colors, believe them. And so at that particular moment when I needed them the most, there were some people that were there and there were some people that weren't. And that's the point that I think you have to say, look, I'm here for you, but you're going to have to meet me halfway. And I think that's one thing that people like us who want to help get caught up in, is I want to help you so much, but at some point you have to take a little bit of ownership as well.
Mm-hmm. You got to take initiative.
Absolutely.
Let's go to the phones now at 800-933-5372. We have Cynthia on the line in Irving. Hey, Cynthia.
Hi. Over here in Irving, we're starting a house for homeless boys in August. For homeless high school boys. Hello? Mm-hmm.
Yes, go right ahead, please.
And I was wanting to ask these two guys what their best advice would be for our house. We're going to have a full-time social worker living in the house and lots of support services. But these are for homeless boys who have no family.
Well, thank you so much for your call, Cynthia, and I certainly hope that it works as well as everybody hopes it will.
I'd say my first piece of advice to you, Cynthia, is positive male role models. I think that's so important and so key, is that if you can find volunteers from the community that are male to come in and mentor with these students. I think having social workers and counselors and that sort of thing is great, but someone just to shoot hoops with, somebody to throw a ball with, that goes, honestly, in my opinion, a longer way in the long run than someone who has a folder and can write down some stats about you. I want somebody that I can connect with. So I would say find those people, and that's going to help.
And I agree with you. And I also would pick people that's positive role models, but also been similar or if not same situation that you've been through, so that you can have somebody that you can relate to.
Absolutely. If you can find people with a story too, that's going to be so, so helpful.
Des, will you live in the dorms when you go to school in the fall?
Yes.
Is it just awesome to think, I'm going to have my own room, I know that I'm going to be there, and it's going to be mine, and I'll know where I'm going every night?
Yes, it's going to be exciting. It's going to be a change, but it's going to be a change for the best.
Mm-hmm. Did you live in the dorms when you went to school, Josh?
I did. I did live in the dorms. And the one thing I would tell you, Des, is you get, like, your space, right?
Oh, wow. That would be nice.
Yeah, but it was you probably have just as much experience as I do. Lots of people, right? So, like, space really isn't an issue. As long as I have my little space, we're good, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. You just need your little space.
What would you tell Des, Josh, about when you get to college, you may find students who've really struggled. You may find a lot of kids who, mom and dad are footing the bill and they drive to school in a fancy car and their lives feel different than yours. They may have problems of their own, but their lives feel really different. And what does it take to sort of find your place in this brand new environment?
Okay, so my best piece, all of those things are going to happen.
So
many people are going to show up and you're going to think, man, you really have it lucky. Mm-hmm. And I've struggled with that for a while. And so this is what kicked in for me. Okay, so they may have it really well, but right now we're on the same playing field. We are both freshmen in college. So what am I going to do to stand out, to make my situation better? And so what you have that lots of people won't have is an uncanny work ethic. Outwork all of them. Be the first person to answer in class. Be the first person in your on-campus job if you get one, to do the best possible job ever. Get involved in everything that you can while you're maintaining your grades. Because if you keep the work ethic and the resilience that you have, you're going to outpace everyone. I ended my master's degree with a 4.0 with straight A's.
Oh, wow.
Exactly. But it was because I learned very quickly that no one was going to hand me something. But you already know that.
Exactly.
Exactly.
You had to go out there and get it yourself.
Go get it. That would be my best piece of advice for you. Is when you get there, from day one, just go get it. Because you can do it.
I will. Thank you.
What do you imagine next year will look like, Des?
Ooh. Well,
it's going to be a little scary.
It's not a quiz. It's not a competition. Okay. We're just curious.
Well, I wouldn't say it's going to be exactly scary, but it's going to be a new experience because I'm going to be around a lot more people than I'm usually accustomed to. Also, different diversities and just being around new people. But it's going to be an adjusting process, but I know I can get through it.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what you're majoring in?
In music instrumentation.
Fantastic. And so you'll take you play a trumpet?
Baritone.
Baritone, sorry. You play baritone. Do you play other instruments as well?
Well, that also play trombone. That was actually my first instrument I started with, and then I ended up switching to baritone.
It's interesting that you both have chosen things in life that had to do with giving yourself a voice. You have music and you have speech and debate. And it sounds like for both of you, these have been things that not only allowed you to express yourselves, but also to express the ways that you were not like everybody else.
Absolutely. I would say that One of my favorite things when I'm coaching speech and debate is the interpretation events, because you get to bring stories to life. They're acting events. Oftentimes people think of speech and debate as we're going to argue with one another and blah, 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 which is fine. It does have that component. But these interpretation events bring stories to life. And I can remember sitting in a dramatic interpretation round and a student getting up there and talking about, like, performing a piece about being homeless and what that was like. And it just brought me to tears in front of a bunch of high school students. And I was like, okay, no shame here. You must have done your job. So it really is, like, from my perspective, this idea of voice comes from the performance. And I know that I've seen people in my own debate squad who are also in orchestra or in band, and they bring it to life in their music. And kudos to the, I don't have that gift, but kudos to people that do.
Des, it's not necessarily easy when you're still kind of in the thick of things to come out and publicly tell your story. It's one thing, you know, to have people at school or at church kind of know. What made you decide that you wanted to participate in this project?
Well, I kind of wanted to let everybody else know, just for the simple fact, because they may be going through the same thing that I'm going through. And then if they, and some people don't know how to get out that situation. I wanted to let people know that you don't have to be stuck in that stump forever. This is a way out. This is one of the ways out. There are multiple ways to get out, but this is just one way.
What did you learn, Josh, about reaching out to people who could be there for you, particularly adults in your life?
I think I've learned, I guess, over the years, that for adults to reach out, it really is going to take, like, you reaching out first. And I think that that's sad, but it's also like a reality, right? I always tell students that all the things that happened in my life, nobody would have known about if I never said anything about them, right? And so it's sort of actually what Des is hitting on and why he wanted to participate in this project is this idea that we both have stories to tell.
Right.
And that we both have a voice. And if we can help just one person out there, then I think it was totally worth being vulnerable and kind of letting your guard down. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes. Like I said, once you help, if I'm able to just help get the message to one person, then that's really my goal, because that one person can turn it to 10, that 10 can turn it to 100, and before you know it can be 1,000.
This phrase at-risk students, it's useful in some ways, and I wonder if it's not a label that, if it's been placed upon you, is really irritating in other ways.
Here's the thing. As an educator, I understand we have to have labels and that we have to give, you know, a heads up. But in my opinion, every student is an at-risk student. Every student at one point or another can all of a sudden become at risk. And so I treat every student as a, quote, at-risk student, not per, like, the label that, you know, the state of Texas requires that we give them. But if we're not keeping an eye on all of our students and checking in and seeing where they're at, they can easily go from, you know, your A student and top of the class to making some different peer choices and changing that up and taking a huge shift down a different path. And I've seen it so many times again for people that we think have it all together, and then all of a sudden it changes. And so to me, we're all at risk, because one little life event can fundamentally change the course of your life. So I try not to use it as a term specific. We're all at risk, myself included.
Exactly. And I agree with you with that statement, because you can, if you focus so much on these group of kids, and then even though the other kids are doing well, but if they feel like, oh, well, why are you ignoring me? You never know. I'm maybe going through some too. Then eventually they will fall.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right.
Desmond Davis is a recent graduate of North Dallas High School, bound for Oklahoma State University in the fall. Josh Hamilton is a teacher at Geyer High School in Denton. The Homeless in High School Project is part of KERA's American Graduate Initiative. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is associate producer, with help on the phones today from Gus Contreras. Our executive producer is Jeff Whittington. You can contact the show at our email address. It's think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.